Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think we'll begin. I'm Geraldine Doogue, and it's my pleasure to welcome you tonight. And the Parish of St. Patrick's acknowledges the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation as the traditional custodians of this place we now call Sydney. So welcome on behalf of Catalyst for Renewal. Now, as probably a lot of you already know, I'm preaching to the converted here. We try to and have conducted conversations for many years now, and we try to convene forums where people can come and talk about modern spirituality in a church on the move in Australia and elsewhere. And we felt in particular in this final year of the Synod that it was a perfect time to discuss the issue of the female diaconate, becoming aware as we did, because as you know, it was there in the papers for the first session, but it's not entirely clear what is going to happen. And I think some of us have been alerted to this rich history of female participation in a way that, well, certainly it was a revelation to me, I'm slightly embarrassed to admit. And we've just detected there's a real interest in this, a real desire for knowledge. So we're hoping that we are meeting a need by our gathering tonight. So a brief background. I'll let Elizabeth and Gail actually do more if they like, but just a little brief context for their involvement in the diaconal ministry. Elizabeth Young, RSM, is an instituted catechist and parish life coordinator in Wilcannia in New South Wales, and she has a range of diocesan leadership roles. In 2021, she founded the Liturgy on the Margins blog, which I think a lot of us might now know about, and Australian Catholics Exploring the Diaconate, to highlight existing diaconal ministry and really to encourage some new thoughts and new solutions around responding to liturgical and sacramental needs and just thinking about possibilities in the diaconal role. Gail has worked in Catholic education in Sydney and Broken Bay for more than 30 years now as a teacher and in leadership positions. She was until recently a member of the Broken Bay formation team for the permanent diaconate, and she continues to engage with groups like Australian Catholics Exploring the Diaconate and Australian Women Preach. So I think we're very lucky to have them tonight. And I want you both to just let us know. I'm just sort of knocked out by this range of possible recommendations here. And I thought, wow, I'm going to take note of this, take a little picture. So at some point, if you care to say a little bit about what you'd recommend or pick out of that, I'd love you to do it, because I think we might all appreciate it. So I'll let Elizabeth kick us off.
Thank you very much, Geraldine. It's really lovely to be here with you. Also, I'll acknowledge this, the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and I'd like to pay my respects to them and acknowledge my privilege in talking to you about women and the diaconate. Many people today, as you know, face issues such as conflict, abuse, climate change, and poverty. So this conversation might seem irrelevant or time-wasting, but I hope to show some of the value of this discussion that is taking place around the world, for the sake of the world, for the church, and for individuals of all genders. I came to this conversation through the good example of religious leaders in my own life. I may have been inspired in my faith in Jesus by my parents, but already at age 7, I wanted to follow those who had publicly nurtured this faith, the Uniting Church ministers, both men and women, and the Catholic priests. I went to a Catholic school, and most of my family joyfully took our sacraments while appreciating the Protestant heritage that we'd come from. As I got older and passed a little jaunt through the world of circus, various spiritualities and interfaith dialogue, I returned to this question of vocation and how to serve the church that had nourished me. Particularly in interfaith dialogue, I had seen the potential of religious leaders to do good in the world, for faith to inspire ethics, community, justice, peace building, and grounded spirituality. So I became what was then available to me as a permanent religious vocation, a Sister of Mercy. and I was so privileged to become part of an order that is very mature in its formation, very consciously fosters a culture of anti-clericalism, teaches me about discernment, and gives me a love for those on the margins. The public religious profession ceremony gave me a new relationship with people in the church, as I represent the order, the church in some ways, but something bigger than myself. This became a 24/7 responsibility and state of life. It was not a job or a career, yet it did not give any liturgical faculties or church authority. As there were few in Adelaide who were joining religious orders at the time, I was also very fortunate to have peers in the ministry formation program, which formed Catholic leaders in the pastoral, theological, spiritual, and personal areas, many of whom went on to be ordained as deacons. When I joined the sisters, I was willing to be directed as to a career path. After all, circus and theology weren't very practical. But after I tried teaching, I found that it was really not my calling, and I have great admiration for teachers now. Fortunately, my formator asked what skills I had been developing instead. And lining them all up, it looked very much like a pastoral ministerial role. So I worked as a youth ministry coordinator, chaplain in prisons and detention centres, and pastoral associate. Then, as I was preparing for another role altogether, the Holy Spirit had other plans. I ended up in my current diocese, Wilcannia Forbes, and the various duties and responsibilities I had looked very much like the diaconate. Today it includes, for example, funerals, baptisms, and leading Sunday Liturgy of the Word with Holy Communion 3 out of 4 weeks. So although I had thought other concerns in the world were much more pressing, I felt a call, as someone in a position of privilege, to help others to follow and have such ministry pathways in the future for the good of the church and the world. Over the COVID lockdown time, there were lots of online webinars being offered by groups that were considering reinstituting women as deacons and looking at the history and possibilities of the ministry. At the same time, I thought a lot about what difference ordination would make, as I was doing almost everything that a deacon could do. There was something about the physical tasks or faculties, but it was more than that. It was something that I'd appreciated in my religious profession, a public lifelong authorisation that brought with it rights, responsibilities, a connection with the long history and tradition of the church, grace from God, ability to serve, and a vocational pathway and witness for others to aspire to. One of the real values of the diaconate that I could see was its official role in providing liturgical and sacramental services to those on the margins or at marginal times in their lives. They could bring the medicine of the church in their person as well as their authorised actions. So for women to be involved in this, we needed to walk with the men currently serving as deacons and with the church for the benefit of all. In 2021, after much prayer and talking with others, I started the blog called Liturgy on the Margins. At the same time, we started the online group called Australian Catholics Exploring the Diaconate. Several of us had dinner together tonight. Both groups, the blog and the group, seek to have conversation around diaconal ministry in the Australian Catholic Church. This includes a present aim to recognise, celebrate and promote diaconal ministry in Australia, especially as it is experienced through liturgy in marginal spaces and communities. And also a future aim, to identify people and situations that yearn for such ministry and potential leaders to carry out this ministry through formal church endorsement. Our members include deacons, those in diaconal formation roles, those in deacon-like ministries, and those who want to share in the conversation. And since then, we have been praying and talking with each other and the wider world. For the blog, I've interviewed 19 now, deacons about their life and ministry, and they warmly welcomed myself and Gail to the last National Association of Deacons conference. We also share stories of many others with deacon-like roles, or priests or bishops who enable liturgy on the margins as well. And we have held a retreat for women and men interested in this vocation. I have found that often the women's stories of discernment sound very similar to those of the men who have been given the sacramental grace of ordination. if it is authorised by the Pope and seconded by the Australian Bishops' Conference, we have real potential to give access to the diaconate to women as well as men. The Orthodox churches have already ordained women as deacons in Greece, Iran, Turkey, and one is preparing in Zimbabwe. Like the model that Gail was part of, the Ecclesial Women, why couldn't Australia create a pilot program here? So this is an opportunity for the church to claim and proclaim the wonderful ministries that women already do, and while appreciating and valuing the many different vocational pathways, recognise that some are called to share God's liturgical and sacramental gifts as deacons on behalf of the church to people crying out in the field hospital. It is an opportunity for the world as we model a more diverse leadership that reflects the reign of God and can attend more clearly to the vulnerable and those who face injustice and discrimination. It is an opportunity for individuals and children to see a future for themselves in the church that is on a pilgrim way, yet slowly becoming closer to its own ideals of a synodal church in mission, sharing the good news and enabling everyone made in the image and likeness of God to shine that light to the world. Thank you.
Look, it's a privilege to be here, and I'm very grateful for the invitation. It's quite a different story, and obviously I've been around for quite a while. So I'll share some of that with you to really explain how I come to be here tonight when we're talking about the ordination of women deacons. Most of us can identify a moment in our lives that is quite pivotal, where we're turned around and suddenly finding ourselves on a totally different path of life. And for me, that happened with the opening of the Catholic Teachers College, as it was then in North Sydney, to mature age students. Up until then, I'd been working as a graphic artist in advertising agencies, following 3 years just down the road here with Julian Ashton Art School. The advertising industry had become increasingly meaningless for me, and by then I had 2 children and had also become a single parent. I was accepted into Catholic Teachers College and remain forever grateful to family and friends who supported me during those 3 years of study. Back then, the theology and scripture programs that were offered were an absolute eye-opener for me and totally life-changing. My time in classroom teaching was really quite brief. I engaged in further study and applied for a position in the Religious Education Department of Sydney Catholic Schools and loved the work. After 10 years there, I became a school principal and enjoyed that too, because it was in a primary school and the sense of being in a community and being part of the Catholic community was wonderful. Then I moved as a consultant to schools in Broken Bay. This time also included 3 years of secondment in the start-up period of the Broken Bay Institute. And part of that role took me into regional dioceses with a colleague to work with teachers who were engaged in postgrad. And they were wonderful weekends because a lot of these teachers didn't see each other, so they arrived and stayed in the town overnight. And they did learn something, but they also had a good time. So around that time, the then Bishop of Broken Bay, David Walker, announced that he was starting a ministry for women and invited responses. His vision was that he wanted to offer a new vocation for women that would provide the opportunity for them to be more deeply involved in the life and leadership of the diocese. He planned to establish a group of what he called ecclesial women who would share with him the pastoral care of the people in Broken Bay. By the time I responded, there were about 6 women in formation and a draft detailed set of statutes had been formed. I was accepted into formation and then as an ecclesial woman, which meant consecration and promises, not vows, to follow the statutes of the ecclesial women, to give myself to God and the church, and to lead a simple life in obedience to the Bishop of Bragg and Bay. Initially, this was for 1 year, then two, then five, and so on. It was expected that you would continue in your employment, which I did, while setting aside time to offer service to diocesan agencies and officers and for continuing formation. So I was still working for the school's office, but I chose to offer assistance to parish priests with formation for pastoral councils and with pastoral planning. Some of the women needed to do some study and others engaged in a variety of different ministries. Now, all of that changed for me when Bishop David asked me to be a coordinator of parish life in a parish. Canon 517.2, burned in my brain forever, allows a bishop to appoint a deacon or a layperson to the pastoral care of a parish when there is a shortage of priests. And a priest would also be appointed who may have other duties in other places, and he would preside at Mass and administer the sacraments. Let's just say that I became a magnet for some very conservative people outside the parish and within the parish. And I became quite a divisive figure. So I thought, this is really going nowhere. And after close to 2 years, I resigned and let them get on with it. It was an interesting time in a number of ways when I look back on it. But quite often people would say to me, look, it's nothing personal, but we just don't want a woman in a leadership position in parish. So, I mean, I've recovered my sense of humour. It wasn't very funny at the time, I can tell you. From there, I was appointed because I'd had to resign my position in the school's office. And that was quite a leap of faith too, from going from a very generous salary to a small stipend and a couple of allowances. So from there, I was appointed to a variety of roles in five different parishes, and it ranged from being an acting business manager, an administrative and pastoral role while a parish priest had surgery, to faith formation and pastoral planning. In other words, it was one of those instances where I thought, I'm glad I was a principal, because you very much become a jack of all trades, or a Jill of all trades, I suppose, is the way to describe it. Now, during that time also, there were two changes of bishops. And as you know, when there's often a period of time where things go on hold for a while until the new bishop arrives. When the second bishop arrived, he appointed me to a new diaconate formation team. There really hadn't been one in operation for quite a while, and there were men who were asking about the diaconate. So the team of one priest and one deacon and myself shaped up a program, and we began with one man and his wife. I'd like to say something a little bit about the length of time and what's involved in terms of becoming a deacon, because I don't think most people realise that it's really quite onerous in lots of ways, the demands that are put upon people. It begins, first of all, between husband and wife, discerning what will this mean for us and for our family if I'm accepted into ordination for diaconate. So from there, that might mean a discussion and further guided discernment with perhaps a parish priest or a spiritual director before being invited to meet with the bishop. Now, there's a lot of paperwork involved, huge amount. You've got to really prove that you're very Catholic in every way. And there's also a psych assessment too at that stage. That varies whether that's before the program starts or whether it's later. But for most of those times, it was done beforehand. So the marriage is honoured always as the first commitment. So the man's wife has to agree, otherwise he can't be considered for ordination. And she's asked to support him, and deacons' wives do that in different ways. And the formation team, the deacons' wives were always invited to be part of it. And some of them did. Some of them would join us just for social occasions. But most of them offered their husbands tremendous support because it also involves academic study. Not many of the men had qualifications that would sit with this. So for most of them, it meant engaging in part-time study for a Bachelor of Theology or maybe a Master's of Theology if their previous qualifications allowed for that. That's part-time. They've got a family, they're working, they're studying, and they're in formation. So it's not an easy thing. But formation really is all about building trusting relationships with which we decided was the way to go. This wasn't going to be a formal thing, serious, but certainly not standing on formality. And our aim was to create a listening place that was a listening place of respect, but also confidentiality to encourage honest sharing. So the formation days included helping the deacons to pray the prayer of the church, which we always did. Very practical stuff, really. Sometimes a shared book reading, theological reflection, and then the opportunity to preach and receive honest and helpful feedback from the group. And that is the same for also practicing baptism, marriage, and the deacons' parts of the Mass. And then for 2 years, the seminarians who were approaching ordination as transitional deacons joined the formation group. And that was really a mutually beneficial experience because seminary experience, from what I can gather, is really very isolating in lots of ways. It's almost like a different world. And these young seminarians were just bowled over by these married men with family responsibilities, work responsibilities, that were on fire to be ordained as deacons. So altogether, the journey to become a deacon is around 5 years, and that includes installation as lector, acolyte, and supervised pastoral placement in a parish that is not their home parish. I wonder, will that be the same for women? I'm just not sure. I have a feeling, actually, that there may be women who put their hand up for this when it happens, who come really formed and theologically educated in some way that hasn't been so common among the men. I'm not quite sure why I'm saying that. I'm recently retired. I was required to do this at the canonical age of 75, which is really, and that for me was last year. So you do need a sense of humour in church because, you know, I'm a laywoman and there were all sorts of things happening. But I thought, OK, I don't think I'm quite dead yet. There are a few things that I can still do. One thing I'd like to acknowledge, all of these resources, anybody who knows some of the diaconate reading would know that there's one glaring omission, which I deliberately didn't put there, Phyllis Sagano. And I paid tribute to her, and I didn't put her up there because she has produced a wealth of written material, and I feel that most people probably would be familiar with her. If you haven't, the best way to do it is to put her into Google, bring her up on her university page where she has absolutely everything you could possibly ask or imagine. I'd like to also just say a couple of brief things about the synthesis report from the Synod. It says in Chapter 9 that there is a convergence around not repeating the mistake of talking about women as an issue or a problem. I can't wait. I think, how good is that? You know, it really is. And it also acknowledges the very diverse positions that people have in regard to the ordination of women deacons. And let's also hope that the reports from the various commissions that have been commissioned by Pope Francis and others on the ordination of women deacons are made available to the delegates before they meet so that they've got time to really read and reflect on them. Because I picked up from watching some of the press conferences that people are not really very well informed on deacons, some people. In the proposals in chapter 11 on deacons and priests, it recognises the need to understand the diaconate itself and to qualify diaconate as a permanent rather than a transitional office. That would be wonderful if that could happen, because some of you would know, if you have a deacon in the parish at the moment, there's not much said about what he does or what he's involved in or how he came to be there. And he seems to be, as most of them are these days, with the shortage of priests, involved in a lot of liturgical things and sacramental, like baptisms and marriage and things like that. So if the transitional part of the pathway to becoming a priest was no longer there, I think that would be a very good thing. And there's no reason why a bishop cannot authorise a seminarian in his final phase of preparing to be ordained as a priest, give him permission to baptise and preach and do all the things that he's likely to be doing as a transitional deacon. It's created great confusion. And I think at the moment, some of you would probably be aware that we've got the permanent diaconate, the transitional diaconate. Although it hasn't happened yet, we've also, through Pope Francis, been given the provision for lay women and men to be installed as lectors, acolytes and catechists. It's getting a bit confusing, I think, for most people. And as Elizabeth said, I think the call to the ministry of diaconate as a woman is wide open with all kinds of possibilities beyond the liturgical. That is certainly a part of it. I think I'm probably over time. Yes, yes, yes. So I'll close it there. Yep.
Look, that was just fabulous. Like, really, that gave me so much, gosh, there's so many thoughts I have. So I actually am going to take you up on that, Gail, because that's found quite confusing. So what's this transitional diaconate, please?
Look, going back to after the Second Vatican Council closed, Pope Paul VI actually adjusted the what is called the course of honour to priesthood. And it involved seven things, including exorcist and all sorts of things. He reduced it down to, I think, how many? Lector, acolyte and deacon. So a seminarian preparing for priesthood is installed as a lector, installed as an acolyte, and then is ordained as a transitional deacon. And it might be for 6 months, 12 months. And then it's very confusing, because then he's also ordained as a priest. And I took a while to get my head around that. I was actually working with a parish priest who was very much into all the finer points of all these things. And he was quite outraged that the ordination of seminarians to transitional diaconate was becoming bigger and bigger and bigger and more elaborate. And I think he was right.
And so your point is that that isn't helpful in
no,
the... right.
It's not. And it detracts from the diaconate itself, because the diaconate is a permanent vocation, always has been. And, I think in terms of history, I think around the 11th or 12th century, things became very, very different in lots of ways, and there was a major overhaul of ordination of priests. And they really became like people set apart, and it was all quite confusing. That's about when diaconate died out for men and for women, because being a deacon became part of your pathway to being ordained a priest.
Yes, yeah. I think when I interviewed Phyllis Zagano for Plenary Matters,
yeah,
I think that's when I became aware of how ignorant I was. But I think she presented material, and correct me if I'm wrong, it became almost a power struggle between the priesthood and the deacons.
Yes.
And am I right? And in terms of sort of scope of works, if I can put it like that. And the priests became very frightened or nettled by the rise of deacons, is that right?
Yeah, and I mean, looking back, it was a very different time too, because emperors could appoint bishops, for example, and there was quite a bit of, corruption, I suppose you have to say. And the deacons, some of them, were actually in charge of land and money and all of that sort of stuff. That's where, and some of those deacons actually became popes, you know.
Right.
So, yeah.
Do you want to add anything there, Elizabeth?
I was going to say the same thing. There were a number of popes that went directly from being a deacon to becoming a pope. And yes, there's quite a few different roles and responsibilities for both men and women who were ordained as deacons in the early church and in the East and the West. In the Eastern Church retained that permanent diaconate and also retained the possibility of having women as deacons until today.
And is there status in those Orthodox, in the Orthodox, is there still a lot of status in being a female deacon?
Well, there's only a few in the world at the moment, and there was some challenge in some countries about whether they could be ordained or consecrated. So again, that's a bit of the conversation that's happening now in the Catholic Church, is can we use the word ordain for women? And so that's within the Orthodox churches. Some have been consecrated as deacons and some have been ordained as deacons.
So what about the lay deacon now? Where's that sit in this process?
Well, that would be consecrated.
Oh, that's
because
consecrated.
If you are ordained as a deacon, you are not lay.
You're not lay.
The great fear is that being ordained a deacon would be a doorway to priesthood,
sure.
Which is just not true. You know, Vatican II, I think in Lumen Gentium, made it very clear that when they were restoring the diaconate, that these men would be ordained into the ministry, not the priesthood. So this is why the transitional diaconate is ultimately very confusing. And I think if that went, it would clear the way for women to take up a permanent vocation as ministry.
Because it would seem less threatening, is that?
Yes.
To the church fathers.
Yes.
Not to necessarily the congregations. So who can clear that away? Who can, for the sake of argument, just the Pope? Right. Okay. All right. See, that's I had just no idea about all that. I must say, we had a marvellous interview with Father Timothy Radcliffe last week, which we're hoping to put on Plenary Matters shortly, and I know he's in various sort of iterations around the place. And I was rather disappointed to hear him say to us, "Now, I want to hose down expectations," he said. And this is him, Radcliffe. And he said, I said, "This is surely low-hanging fruit for the church." And he said, "I agree with you, but I'm just not sure people should have their hopes high." So that was quite a shock to me to hear at this point. Now, it's only March. But how do you feel it's going to be debated at the next session, Elizabeth?
I think it's very unclear, and I think there are quite a few people who don't have that hope or feel that it won't get too far. But then I think the conversation is definitely growing around the world in lots of different ways, and all these forums like this, for example, are helping that conversation happen and help normalise the conversation because many people we've spoken to have said we've never thought about it or we haven't learned anything about it, either the diaconate itself or women in the diaconate. So it's really building that, and it has been over some years. There's been several commissions right since the Second Vatican Council about women and diaconate, but now it's really getting that exposure and being part of the public conversation. So it's amazing to see how much has changed in some of the documents that have come through this synod process.
Really?
And, for example, and the word you actually used before was female diaconate. That was used in one of the earlier documents, but that was changed with the Instrumentum Laboris didn't use that phrase. When we hear female diaconate, it can sound like it's something separate to the male diaconate, for example. we hope to be talking about the one diaconate.
So what did the IL, what did the instrument and laboris talk of it? How did they speak of it? Diaconate.
It talked about the diaconate, and then even more so in the document that came out, the synthesis report,
yes,
talked about women being given access to the diaconate. So that was much a more positive way of putting that conversation, which is good to hear.
What? How do you read it, Gail?
I've got mixed feelings. I you know, do I dare hope? And then other days I think it will probably take a very long time. I would imagine that if it happens to get up and if the Pope says yes, we will have women ordained to the diaconate, that it there will be all sorts of, I suppose, delays in terms of further studies and Lord knows what. But part of me feels very hopeful, and the very fact that they're put as a proposal in the report, that they want to look at diaconate as a standalone, and I think that's very hopeful. But, I mean, our own Archbishop Costello, I think late last year or early this year, in an interview somewhere, said, oh, it'll probably be a ministry for women. You know, he didn't commit himself. So there's, but the other part of it is, I think, you know, I'm aware of people who were really hard-nosed, people who went to the last assembly, that really had quite a conversion experience in terms of what happened there. So if we believe in the work of the Spirit, she might actually do something.
And what is being discussed? Well, first of all, two things, I think. Your own experiences of what it involves, because this whole notion of servant leadership, you know, which has been quite a vexed issue, or is it, if I say more than that, does it encompass a broader range of worship? I mean, I think it's very important to hear how you think it's being lived out and whether this would be a contribution or a threat. I'm really quite intrigued by how you think it might be perceived. Would you like to?
Yes, I think the diaconate as it stands is not universal in the Catholic Church. Not all dioceses have taken it up. Some have only taken it up partially. Some have taken it up with much more enthusiasm. And so it would be the same for women, I'm sure. It's also got a lot of scope. So the diaconate is something that you have your ministry and responsibilities coming from the bishop as to the needs that are seen within the diocese. It's not coming from the local parish priest, for example.
Oh, I see.
So there's a lot of...
The bishop appoints the deacon.
The bishop does, yes. So the kind of interviews I've been doing with deacons are just fascinating because they do such a range of different ministries. There's so many opportunities that can really... enhance the whole church alongside of all the other ministry roles. And there was a study done in America on a couple of dioceses that had, one had deacons and one didn't, permanent deacons, with the similar numbers of priests. And after a few years, the one that had deacons actually increased the numbers of priests. So it wasn't where the fear might be that it's a threat to other forms of ministry. The hope is that the diaconate would actually be able to
because
enhance
the parish itself grew, I take it.
Possibly, I'm not sure of all the reasons, but if there's a culture of valuing people's gifts and charisms and vocations and across a range of cultures, family backgrounds, genders, all of those things, it can't help but be a good thing for the church.
Gail?
Yeah, look, I recall a deacons' conference, a national deacons' conference a few years ago in Tasmania, and there were two deacons from Germany. And also, I think they had also had a video of deacons in the Philippines. Now, the work was so diverse. And I think what has happened is because of the shortage of priests in many, many areas, that deacons have been brought in to administer some of the sacraments. But their work can range over all kinds of things. And the bishop would discern where the needs are in his diocese. But I think a deacon could also make some suggestions if he's not aware of them, particularly for women.
Just a couple of other things. Preaching at Mass was one of the proposals that did not get through our plenary council, and I certainly won't be going to the Synod. Is that something in your experience that deacons, male or female, wish to do? It is it?
Yes, I've heard that from deacons, and in my own experience, preaching is such a privilege and it's such a big, big responsibility. You realise when you get up there, people hear your words and, well, certainly I as a parishioner hear a preacher's words and I really take them to heart. And this is, you're representing the church, you're representing something much bigger than yourself. So it really involves a lot of preparation and involves a lot of reflection and listening to the Spirit and having the scriptures sort of imbue your life in every way and the world imbue your life, like to be really aware of what's going on in the world, in your local community, the people that you're preaching to, and to be able to bring them together in this creative way. In preaching, it's quite different than teaching. It's quite a different skill, and that's something that can definitely be enhanced for everyone by good preparation and training and a rich diversity of voices and backgrounds to be able to break open the scriptures.
Okay, and do you agree? Yeah,
yes, I do, Geraldine, very much so. And I think when you look at the enormous rise in feminist interpretation by men and women feminists of our scriptures and what that has given us is just remarkable. But I don't often hear people preaching or, you know, deacon or priest preaching with that lens. And I think certainly it's opened up people like Barbara Reed, the Dominican, and she talks about a conversion she had, you know, in actually working in a soup kitchen and realising how far removed what she was engaged in was for the people there. And to actually see women who are being abused, who are living in poverty, to see with their eyes what the scripture might be saying and open that up.
And look, finally, in terms of other support for female deacons, I think there's this US group, Discerning Deacons, who donated a $1.25 million endowment for female women preaching in collaboration with Notre Dame in Indiana. Now, are you getting any sense of that here, or is this just extremely embryonic ground here in Australia, I wonder? Well, is anybody sort of stepping up with suggestion that they might donate and try?
I wish.
Not sure about donations, but there are several programs. It's also possible for people that aren't preparing for priesthood or diaconate to study homiletics. So courses at universities are open to anyone to study them. I was fortunate to do mine through the Ministry Formation Program, which was particularly with those who are preparing for the diaconate or other leadership roles. But the major theology colleges have courses in homiletics. But there's also groups and programs specifically for women that are preparing women for leadership roles. In some ways, I wonder whether in the future we won't necessarily need things like that necessarily just for women, but because some of the roles they're going into, men who also might not be being ordained might also go into them. So I would hope, you know, that we can have opportunities for everyone that feels a call to do something in the church to follow that. So that's there's not only an option for either seminary or this program for women.
Interesting. Go.
Look, I'm just looking at Tricia Gemmell down there, who's very much a part of Australian Women Preach. They've just celebrated their third anniversary. And last year, we both engaged with a conference on preaching, PreachFest, organised by the Uniting Church up here in Pitt Street. And I know women who, and men too, who have actually gone to the Uniting Church theological colleges to learn how to preach. Because they do it well.
It's extraordinary. This is all very new to me. Really, it's very interesting. The married deacons and the importance and the priority given to the wives, I found that very interesting. How does that tend to work? Because, you know, Elizabeth's in her liturgy on the margins, there's a range of different... I love the stories, the sort of people's lives. as people became more and more absorbed, it seemed to me, in their work. I just wondered, you know, does it altogether, well, is it necessarily a serene experience for the family?
Not always, but I think, you know, in the formation group, certainly, and with children, you know, where there are young children, it can be quite a difficulty, particularly when their father is assigned to a parish and they've developed all their friendships. Those sort of things can happen. It's not always plain sailing, I suppose, as any marriage is, but the ability to talk to each other, I found, and things like theological reflection, that some of the deacons would introduce that to share with their wives. Most of the wives were very supportive. Some of them weren't Catholic. I can think of a couple of men whose wives weren't a scrap interested in anything church, but were ultimately very, very supportive. If something happens in the marriage or if the deacon is widowed, he can't remarry. He's supposed to be celibate, which is a bit of a thing. And, I mean, if the marriage falls apart, which could happen, if there's a divorce, he is to stay
this
celibate.
This is an ordained deacon?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah. So it's a very big undertaking, and it really is much more than the commitment of the man to diaconate. It's a family thing. Mm.
And, look, one of the things I don't think we've actually dealt with is that there are two things, the discussion about clerical women, because, I mean, ironically, or the perception of clericalised women, because as I read it and some of the interesting things, this is a very circuitous development, shall we say, of the current discussion, is some people who are clearly opposed saying, well, look, it's no use if we develop a new bunch of clericalised women, you know, which is, I think, rather cute, so I'd like you to talk about that. But so, like, if say people are sitting here tonight saying, well, gosh, I'm really inspired, this has really intrigued me, like, what do you find, even though you say there's tremendous diversity, do you find that people are seeking to serve others in all manner of the existing outreaches that are available in parishes? Or are they thinking altogether anew? I just can't work out quite what you're both hinting at there, whether it's the possibility of somebody just, you know, the world's... Yeah, they tilt at windmills, or don't they? Or don't they?
I guess just something about the first question, which is often talked about, clericalising women. I guess there's a few things that I think around that. One thing is that all ordained people are being clericalised from being lay to becoming a cleric. So the question's, do we want any ordination then? That would be the question, I guess, really. Are we saying we don't want an ordained ministry? But another thing I would think about is that there have been and there still are many religious women who are very clerical. Mm. And at least in my formation, I feel very fortunate that there was a lot done very, very seriously to overturn that. And there was a lot of thinking put into that, like how do we do formation that creates a different culture? And the culture has to be not just those in formation, but it has to be across the whole of the order. I have to see that in my... We don't have superiors in the Sisters of Mercy, but I have to see that among the leaders and among everyone. So it's a whole big culture shift, really.
But you still do have to groom people for leadership, I take it.
I have to groom people for leadership in a way that, well, for us isn't for life in a religious order. But that's been done, and very consciously, among many religious orders and in certain places, certain dioceses, certain... you know, situations. So there are skills that have been learned, and a lot of people that are coming into the diaconate come from the worlds of business or education or government or unions or all sorts of things. They might have learned some of these skills really well. They might have learned how to work with people of all different backgrounds. But that's so much richness to bring in to the ordained ministry if we can bring in some of that diversity of background and profession and those sort of skills which actually might help with that, creating that culture. Where everyone is a valued member for their gifts, no matter what position they're in.
Very interesting. Go.
I really do think that ordination would be a very positive thing for women who want to be deacons. And for a number of reasons, I mean, it certainly says something about, because through ordination and, well, through baptism, if you like, a relationship to the whole church is changed at baptism. It is through ordination as well. And one of the... I went back and read some of the Vatican II documents, and I think it's Gaudium et Spes, where it talks about ordaining men to diacon, and I think this was largely in mission countries because they were already doing the work and listed all the things that they were doing. But then it also went on to say that the grace of the sacrament would strengthen them. And I think as Catholics we believe in the grace of sacraments doing something. It's not just like... you know, now you're appointed to XYZ, that it really is part of our understanding. So I feel it would be terribly sad if there is another ministry for women that is there instead of ordaining women to diaconate. I'm prepared for the fact that it probably mightn't happen, but I strongly believe that women should be ordained if they have a calling to diaconate.
And if people are here tonight, let alone people who might want to spread the word, decide, yes, I think I do have a calling, what do they do next?
I think find a trusted spiritual director first, if they are, you know, if they have a good relationship with the parish priest, begin discerning with them, or a good friend who is helpful. Really talk it through, really prayerfully discern it. And I think, you know, it's not, you know, religious calls to vocational calls come in different ways to different people. For some it can be a really slow burn and it might take a while. But find someone that you can trust, and I think a spiritual director would be the first place to go.
And also, we'd be very interested in having them be involved in our group, which is
yes.
Australian Catholics Exploring the Diaconate.
Yes, well. And just finally, what do you think what should we look out for at this next synod? Like, where will this be introduced? What point of proceedings? Because I'm hoping to be there, you see, and I'm just sort of, yes, I am. I'm not quite sure yet, but I'd love, and I just don't even know where it's going to sit.
So I guess it comes across in two of the areas that came in the synthesis document. One was the one around women and one was around priests and deacons.
Right.
So it's sort of a crossover there. And with, as Gail said, the whole question about how the diaconate is being developed since it was reintroduced in the Western Church in some Vatican II.
Right. Well, look, I think that's just been a real revelation, and it's just terribly impressive to hear you both speak so confidently and constructively. So, ladies and gentlemen, will you please thank Gail Gill and Sister Elizabeth Ryan.